For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill. And sitting in for Ryan Kiesel is Oklahoma Policy Institute Legislative Director Bailey Perkins. Bailey, welcome to the show.
Hello, yes. Thank you for having me.
The general election is now less than 4 weeks away, and the latest poll has Republican candidate Kevin Stitt with a narrow lead over his Democratic opponent, Drew Edmondson. In a survey of 500 likely voters, 46% support Stitt, with 40% supporting Edmondson. Meanwhile, Libertarian candidate Chris Powell has 4%, and 9% are undecided. Neva, what do you think of these numbers?
I think they're predictable for where we are right now. I mean, when you look at the Stitt numbers coming out of the runoff in August, we found him with numbers that were higher. That he was, I think, polling around 49%. And so I think what we see in the closing stretch of any competitive race is that the numbers narrow. And I think what we also see is that there is somewhat parity in spending between the two candidates, and that also is a very impacting part of the proposition. You know, to this point, Stitt had been the person who was outspending everyone, and now that has changed. And so I think we'll see that go back and forth, and I think there will be a lot of competition. We'll see whether outside groups come in and weigh in a significant way in terms of the dollars out there. Those do clearly influence the poll numbers as well. Bottom line is, I mean, when you really look at the polls that are out there, to me, the significant takeaway point is that in the generic ballot question, the Republicans still have a 14-point lead, and I think that is the good news for Republicans looking at the November election.
And Bailey, 9% undecided, so there's still a lot of leeway here for both candidates.
Absolutely. And when you look at what's happening in upticks in voter registration, it's really going to be a race about who decides to show up to the polls for early voting or for the November 6th election day. When you look at polling on particular policy issues, you're seeing Oklahomans are in favor of Medicaid expansion, and they're in favor of monies for education, and that's something that the Edmondson campaign is pushing hard. And so it is going to be a very competitive race, and it really is going to depend on who shows up to the polls.
And I think it also depends at the end of a campaign about which issues really start to get real hot traction. And I think, normally, and particularly in gubernatorial races, the issue of taxes is always one of those cutter issues, and now we have a contrast between someone saying that they will not raise taxes versus someone who says that they would find it acceptable to increase taxes. So the tax question's one thing. I think there are several other policy issues that are out there that are smaller drivers among, pocketed voters. But overall, I think it becomes the issue. At the end of the day, it really is what the voters view their candidates, looking at them kind of through the prism of are they conservative or moderate or liberal, based upon where they are on that scale as well.
Yeah, and also you mentioned education, and of course there's been some talk about Edmondson really kind of came out clear about where he wants to go, and Stitt seems to be basically saying we could do property taxes, and sometimes that doesn't always sit so well with your local officials when it comes to education.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is going to depend on where people are in conversation that Neva was mentioned as we get closer to election day and what policy stances are going to be on the minds of voters. It's also going to affect what's happening on lower ticket on the ballot, right, since there's more candidates and what conversations they're able to drive on the doors. And so there's been a lot of conversation about taxation, but there's a lot of conversation for those who are in the education policy realm who are pushing for more dollars for education, and that could help the Edmondson campaign, and so we'll see.
And I think when you look at who is likely to vote, I mean, some of this polling that's out now indicates that Edmondson is doing well in the metropolitan areas, where, Stitt, as we would expect, is doing well in rural areas. He was on the recent polls showing that Stitt was performing better with the male voters, Edmondson with the female voters. I mean, all of those things in terms of turnout do begin to have an impact, but the bigger takeaway is, some of the missing missing pieces. For instance, will McCornett publicly endorse Kevin Stitt? The expectation is that that could come very soon, maybe as soon as today. That will definitely have an impact in the metropolitan Oklahoma City area, where he performed extremely well, both in the primary and the runoff against Stitt. So those things, I think, could have high impact in the race as well.
There you go.
Agreed. Well, and recently, Mary Fallon came out in favor in endorsing Kevin Stitt, so that could have an impact.
Depends on the endorsements, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, it's education supporters are returning to the state capitol ahead of the general election. The event, dubbed the Remember in November Rally, takes place Saturday afternoon, October 27th, with the slogan, Walk Back to the Capitol. Organizers want to send a message to incumbents who didn't support public education of the walkout last spring. Bailey, is this a good way to get the message out to voters?
I think it shows that this is the after effect of the teacher walkout. Some folks wondered on whether this would be a one and done event, and it's showing that teachers are still engaged. There's still either frustration or excitement, depending on what side of the coin that you're on. But it's showing that at the grassroots level, beyond any organizational structure, that teachers and those connected to the education realm still are engaged and still want to have a voice in the election cycle. And so it will hopefully continue increasing turnout and keeping people engaged and aware in the election and beyond.
And even they made sure to hold it on a Saturday so it would not actually stop any classes. Do you think it also, when it's going to hit the news, I mean, all the news places are going to out report it, and it's only a week before the election. Do you think that's going to matter?
I think everything matters at the week before the election. Every level of activity by any group has some impact in terms of generating turnout. Obviously, I think that's one of the motivating factors. They're trying to mobilize and remind people who traditionally, when you look at the voting patterns, have not been the best voters. So I mean, they see that as something they've got to really key in on. I think the other side of the coin, though, is that that if it's all a one-sided discussion, that it's just all about more money, and there's not the balance of really reflecting back on what did happen during the session, what the votes did actually do in terms of beginning to address the issues, not only just the $6,100 average teacher pay raise, but the fact that there was $52 million additional for support personnel, the $33 million for textbooks, the $17 million that was added to the state funding formula. Those are ongoing. Those weren't one-time deals. This is something that was that we now have infused into the budgets on the education side. So progress was made. It was significant. And I think if it's just about you really didn't do much, and we're going to be back in a high-spirited way and demand more and more, I think the question in my mind is, how will voters react to that? Because I think the longer that we see time pass from the time that the teachers were at the Capitol, there has been some change, I think, in public sentiment over that. And so there's a real fine line there where you can go too far, too hard and too far to try to make your point and maybe lose ground.
And Bailey, there aren't many incumbents left who didn't support the tax. Most of the 12 of them were voted out just in the primaries and runoffs. So there's very few who didn't actually make this vote. There are still left. Most of them have resigned, or they've been ousted out in elections.
And I think that's an area where we can credit those who have been engaged in pushing the legislature to make more investments into education and core public services. With increasing the amount of revenue going towards education, we're also seeing now on campaign trails that education still the number one talking point, whether you're a Republican candidate or Democratic candidate. And they're not just talking about education and what happened last session, but what needs to happen going forward in investing into classrooms, reducing class sizes and things like that. And so I think the conversation that's happening with parents who are doing this rally, but also just the continued conversations during the election cycle are continuing to push legislators to focus on what else needs to continue to happen to strengthen the education system in Oklahoma.
And I certainly hope that in addition to their focus on the legislative races and the races in November, that these same folks in the school districts across Oklahoma will be interested in what happens in the local elections with their school board, with their school board members, and trying to engage more at the local level, where I think they can have, as we always say, all politics is local, have the highest impact the fastest. And I think it's an education process for them as voters to see that they really can have a significant influence on what goes on actually in the classrooms in their home districts.
More important, when you're voting for city councils and school boards, that's where your real changes are going to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you see folks who have experience in the education realm, in school boards and in some municipal level seats, but for the first time in our state's history, we could possibly have like the largest teacher caucus within the Oklahoma legislature. So that's even going to shape what conversations happen if more teachers are elected in the building, and that could also drive more people to be aware of what's going on in education and influence different levels of engagement.
Sure, we had a lot of teachers sign up last spring, so to run for, and a lot of them are still alive,
that's
so
right.
It's pretty amazing. The independent candidate for state treasurer, Charles DeCoon, held a press conference at the Capitol attacking his opponent, State Representative Randy McDaniel, for legislation McDaniel authored over pensions. He even brought out state workers, including firefighters, law enforcement officers, and teachers, to raise concerns about the negative impacts of McDaniel's pension reforms. Neva DeCoon is McDaniel's only opponent. What do you think of his move to attack McDaniel on what was basically McDaniel's signature achievement in the state house?
Well, I think it is an attempt to get some attention in a race where, when you have no money, you have no name ID, there's very little interest in these secondary races, quite frankly. They really have to battle to get any attention at all. I mean, it gave him a headline. It gave him an opportunity to kind of get his name out there for the first significant time in the race, and maybe the only time. I mean, he raised an issue that was, as you say, the signature issue against Randy McDaniel, but I don't think it has any traction. I think it was kind of throwing a bunch of stuff out there, none of which really had a lot of substance to it. It was more just the kind of the overarching themes that we always see when we talk about pensions and cost of living increases and the things that are impactful in that area. But the bottom line is, during his tenure in the legislature, there was vast improvement in terms of how these pension funds that were upside down actually became very very well placed and much more solvent. So I just don't see it as having much traction, but it was an opportunity to get a news conference.
And Bailey?
Well, I think it brings in important conversation,
yeah.
If anything, regarding pensions in Oklahoma. Now that there has been progress within the pension system, it brings a great conversation about where do we go from here to ensure that we're meeting that commitment that we gave to state employees of, when you get that pension, ensuring that the value of that dollar is consistent with inflation over time. And so I think it's a great opportunity to bring in an important issue when it comes to ensuring that we're funding COLAs for pensions and making sure we're meeting that commitment for state employees.
And regardless of whether or not it has any traction, at least it reminded people there's a treasurer's race.
Well, that's right. As I say, any secondary office, I mean, people struggle to get attention at all. I mean, the folks get in the voting booth or look at their absentee ballot, and all of a sudden here are all these other races that have not been the focus during these months of the election season, and they really find that they know very little about some of these candidates. So that part of it is a healthy part of the Democratic process.
And DeCoon was the only opponent to McDaniel. So if DeCoon wasn't even running, there would be no Democrat opponent. So at least there's actually some kind of a challenge to that seat.
Absolutely.
Oklahomans who usually don't vote are getting absentee ballot applications in the mail. The nonprofit Center for Voter Information is sending out 59,000 applications, mostly to African Americans, Latinos, millennials, and unmarried women. These groups are notorious for sitting out of elections, especially in midterms. Bailey, do you think something like this might help?
I think any opportunity to make it easier for more Oklahomans to participate who have been traditionally disenfranchised is always a great thing. It's not uncommon for groups to help push different ways for voters to get engaged. And so this could be a great opportunity for those who may not typically be targeted during campaign seasons to get the information that they need and to make it easier for them to participate this election cycle.
Yeah, Neva.
And I agree. I think increasing voter participation, voter awareness is always one of the things that that particularly these nonprofit groups, that's part of their focus, should really hit that head on and be as aggressive as possible. The flip side is sometimes these programs to identify and target certain sectors meet with a little bit of resistance. I mean, folks, I think sometimes are stunned that that they can get something in the mail, that they have a ballot already basically pre-printed out with their name and information, and that the suggestion in some cases, not necessarily this specific one, is that where they show that, look, we see that you haven't voted in the last four elections, and you know, we really think that this is an important part of the process, and we really think that you should go vote. And people are somewhat startled, I think, at times, that how do people know whether I vote or not? Well, it's public information. This is information readily accessible. There's nothing proprietary or private about it. It is out there.
And I think, how you voted. We just know you whether or not you did.
But we do know if you went to the polls, whether it was in an absentee ballot form, early person voting, or you just go to the polls on November 6th this year, all of that will be recorded. So, again, I think there's this give and take anytime you're trying to engage people in the process. But the overall takeaway, I think all folks across the board, regardless of party, would say is a good, healthy part of the process.
And I like the fact that they were sent out absentee ballot applications, basically showing people, because a lot of people think, oh, well, the only way I can vote is to go in person on that Tuesday. And, well, I've got work from 7 to 7. There's no way I can get away. Well, this is kind of a way of telling people you have other options.
Absolutely.
And I don't think most people know that.
They don't, and especially because opportunities to vote and ways to vote vary per state. So if it is someone who is new to Oklahoma, this could be an opportunity to show them another way that they can participate in our state. And so it also drives an important conversation about some opportunities where we could do things to make it easier and expand opportunity for people to participate, whether that's pre-registration or it's vote by mail or other opportunities. And so if this this generates more turnout and increases more participation, then it gives us the opportunity to look into other election reforms.
Yeah. The number of registered voters in Oklahoma has surged over the past 9 months by more than 76,000 to 2.1 million. Republicans made up 60% of the net increase in voters, followed by independents. Neva, while this is good news for the amount of registered voters, do we think it has any impact on the actual turnout?
I don't know that it really alters the turnout. We're talking midterm elections where historically in Oklahoma as well as across the nation, voter participation is lower than it is in presidential election years. So I think always folks that are on the ballot in years like this, they know that that they've got to really work to get folks out. You have that traditional segment of the population that always go vote. These are people who are that have been involved in the process. They understand it, and they're the predictable voters that we all really key in on. These are the folks that we know are going to go. So these are the folks that get the most attention, get the most mail, get the most door contact. They're the real keys to the election. But expanding that universe is obviously the optimum scenario. And I think all of these things in terms of just getting people registered, that's step one. So when we see this increase, we can look at it from the standpoint of, you know, which party is most impacted positively or negatively. I mean, we've talked about the fact that even in these current numbers with independents being 15% of the registration now in Oklahoma, that's significant. And it clearly it is the growing number. I mean, even though the Libertarians are now recognized as a party, it is not a party that's getting any traction in Oklahoma, still less than 1%. But I think beyond the takeaway of Republicans, Republicans becoming dominant, these numbers coming out, making it 47%. I mean, in 1990, Republicans were 33%. So, really, I mean, low. You know, as we look across the spans of time, I mean, we've seen a real changing political landscape in Oklahoma that doesn't seem to be moving any different direction per se right now, other than as some of these newer registrations are coming up. I mean, I think younger voters, we are seeing more of them being inclined to identify as independent as opposed to one of the two major political parties.
Neva Bailey, what did you think about this? The registrations?
I think it's always a great thing that we're seeing an uptick in people registering to vote and participating. But when we compare it to our population, it's around the same amount. So one interesting thing that my boss, David Blatt, brought to my attention was in 89, we had about 2.2 million voter registrants when our population was 3.1 million. And today, we're close to nearly 4 million Oklahomans, but our registration is still below that 50%-ish when it comes to registration. And so we still have a long ways to go to ensure that more people are participating and getting registered to vote in that first step of being a part of their civic engagement process. But we are in a peak time while people are really interested in the issues to continue that uptick of making sure more people are participating in the system.
I was also thinking, 76,000, I'd love to check the numbers. I would love to see someone over at the Oklahoma Policy Institute did something like this. How many actual people turned 18 during the past year? Surely there had to have been more than 76,000 Oklahomans who turned 18 who could register to vote. So I'm wondering how many of these are just brand new voters who just turned 18.
That's an interesting question. So I do think that kind of bookends what we've talked about in terms of education and the number one issue that's always on the minds of the voters, and the fact that we have this long road to go to really get very good voter participation in our state. And I think we've got to marry those. I think we've got to, when you talk about 18-year-olds, I mean, they have to see the value and the civic responsibility of becoming a good voter and becoming engaged early, not just something that we expect when we know that if you're 65 plus or 60 plus, you're going to be in all likelihood be a very good voter. But it's that wide gap in between, and particularly on the lower end, with younger voters who say that it just doesn't matter, my vote doesn't count, I don't care. I mean, the level of disengagement is always troublesome, and hopefully we can do more to really educate them on that process and the value of being someone who does take that vote seriously.
Right, and the realization though that the local races are the ones that actually do matter when you're small. Not don't worry about the president's race. When you're talking about local, city, county, your state representative, these one vote does actually matter.
Absolutely. And I think as long as we are ensuring that elections remain competitive or we're giving people a reason to vote, we'll see an increase of turnout. Considering what's happening across the nation, but even here in Oklahoma and the different challenges that we're facing, we're seeing a lot more people get fired up and finding candidates that they believe in. And so with the record number of people running for office and the exposure that people have and feeling that connection to different issues, I'm hopeful that we'll see more people continue to participate over time and get registered to vote.
There we go. And Bailey's and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.